Hello, and thank you for joining us for the Digital Twins webinar. I'm Sarah Bemperat with Realcom, and today we have a great lineup of speakers joining me today. I'm very happy to have them present on digital twin strategies, but before we get started, let's go over a few housekeeping items. You can use the Q&A section to your right to submit your questions and comments for the panelists, and we'll try to get to all the questions throughout the webinar. If we don't get back to you today, we'll do our best to follow up with you after the event. And for the best webinar experience, we recommend that you log out of any other internet applications that are currently running. And if you need any technical assistance, you can contact me at sbemperat@realcom.com. We are also recording this webinar and we'll be sending out a copy of the recording within the next few days. This webinar is sponsored by City Zenith, Drone Deploy, and MicroShare, and we'll learn more about these companies throughout the session. And with that, I'd like to introduce you to the moderator for today's event, Joe Amador. Joe is a seasoned expert in smart buildings, IoT, and energy. He has over 15 years of experience as a product leader with building industry innovators, sales engineer, and industry consultant. Joe, thank you very much for moderating. I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to have a distinguished and esteemed panel. Today we're talking, and I'll give a couple quick comments, but I really want to jump in because we have a spectacular array of speakers. But digital twins, as somebody in the industry, have always presented or have recently presented a big opportunity. Obviously, we have more and more data that we're collecting out of buildings, more sensors being deployed, more IoT systems. And I think one big question in the industry is, what do I do with this data or these data? Where's the value add? How can I take a lot of data I'm collecting and turn it into actual value, better outcomes for tenants and occupants, better operations, better top line and bottom line benefits? And really what we have here on this panel is a nice discussion between practitioners, David Gallagher from Oxford Properties, Emmanuel Daniel from Microsoft, and then a number of key vendors from our community. So this is important to me. I think it's important to the industry because we do want more data. That being a more data-driven organization, having more data-driven operations, clearly can provide a lot of benefits. But at the same time, there needs to be an outcome, and there needs to be a focus on the outcomes. And digital twins can provide some of those outcomes or a pathway to some of those outcomes. So I think with that, one quick point, we have time for questions for every speaker. We'll have a panel discussion at the end of the presentations, but please do feel free as a guest here to submit questions. We'll try to get to them. It's always great to get questions from the audience. So with that, let me give a quick introduction to David Gallagher, Senior Manager of Digital Buildings at Oxford Properties. David is a senior manager focused on the strategy and execution of Oxford's smart building program, including implementation of portfolio-wide building system infrastructure and software platforms. Experienced in energy management, he also has a background in using data and analytics to optimize energy use and facility operations. David, it's a pleasure to have you here. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Oh, it's a pleasure to be speaking again at another Realcom session. So, I think for my session here, I've got a few slides. What I'd like to do is give a background on Oxford's approach to digital buildings, which is ultimately supported by digital twins. So jumping right in, first I'd like to give some context on Oxford for those of you who are not familiar. So this slide here presents a few stats. I'm not going to go into every one of them in detail. I think you can read for yourselves, but I'll highlight sort of the main points. We're a global real estate organization. We exist in six continents. We have about 400 buildings across six different asset classes. And on the left there, you can see the breakdown of our asset classes by assets under management. I'd also say at any given time, we have a number of developments in the pipeline. So quite a large organization, and we have a lot of customers that come through our doors on a daily basis. What's not stated on this slide here is the fact that we're owned by a pension fund and we have 500,000 members. So essentially what that means is our buildings are financial vehicles that generate returns for a pension fund. And, you know, saying that, we have a big portfolio that generates big returns. And we think that there's a big opportunity by digitizing our buildings to help secure those returns for the future. So Joe talked about the what do you do with all this information from twins? I'd say more importantly to begin with is the why. Why do you even want twins? And for us, it's about securing those returns, as well as establishing sustainable and healthy communities for all of our tenants, our customers, and guests within our properties. So our thesis is essentially that digital buildings will help us to increase revenues, lower costs, improve sustainability, improve comfort, and help us to grow the asset value. And there's really two main ways that we see that happening. The first is through data-driven efficiencies, I call. So if you look across our entire portfolio, we've got hundreds of buildings, thousands of systems, and there's lots of data that's locked away within these systems and buildings that, you know, I'd say nobody's really looking at. Yes, we have automation systems that run the buildings. Yes, we have, you know, amazing operators and facilities management teams that care and maintain our buildings. But there's also tons of data that we're not looking at that we can use to drive further efficiencies. The second piece to that, I'd also say, is there's a lot of capabilities that are unlocked related to interoperability of systems. And if we can unlock this interoperability, we can then start to offer digital experiences to our customers. So those two things together, the efficiencies and the experiences, we think will lead to a ton of digital building capabilities that'll help us to secure our returns. And all of this is supported by Digital Twin Foundation. Moving to the next slide here, I think it's safe to say that Oxford, like every other real estate organization, has a lot of technology in our buildings. And we've been doing a lot with technology over the years. For example, there on the right, you see Spot the Robot from Boston Dynamics. We've actually used this robot in one of our latest developments to take measurements. We've piloted cleaning robots in our malls, autonomous robots in our hotels to deliver linens and food. And we've also done lots of tests with analytics platforms over the years, and we've in fact deployed it across our Canadian portfolio. The one thing I would say though is traditionally all of these technology solutions have existed as data silos. So they've worked amongst themselves individually to produce results. But I think going forward with digital twins, we see there an opportunity to start collecting information from all of these systems. It really is a case where the whole is greater than the sum of the individual parts with all these point technology solutions. This slide here says why, but I think it more outlines our approach. And the way we see this digital twin value is really across the entire life cycle of the buildings. So not only for existing buildings, but also new buildings as well. For existing buildings, by collecting information, we think that there's efficiencies to be gained at the building level, but also if you pair this information up with some of the internal information we have around financials and customers, we can start to find efficiencies at the portfolio level. And then on a macro level, we can start to use this information to make better investment decisions at the firm level. And then also for new buildings, we think we can combine all of those efficiencies and value from the data, but we can also combine that with standards to develop our new buildings. So putting the right systems in from the beginning that gives us those capabilities from the get-go, and also using that data to digitally commission our buildings. And as I was putting this together, I thought, you know, we actually have been working with twins in a number of different ways for a long time. You know, when you think about a new building, it comes with a spatial twin. It's called the BIM model. It comes with an energy twin. You know, that's the energy model. But usually these models exist for compliance purposes during the design and construction stage, compliance against code, compliance to LEED. They're usually developed and then parked on a shelf and never used after that. So our vision is to actually use some of these twins that are developed during that design stage and construction stage and use them into the operations of the asset. And by doing that, like I said, we see there being lower costs for us, increased revenues through digital experiences for customers, and ultimately growth in asset value. The big question is, how are we going to do this? Given that we have 400 buildings across the portfolio and across the world, and each building has its own operating team, it's not a small task to start digitizing our portfolio and implementing these digital twins. So for us, it's really a matter of focusing on our teams and our people. As much as this is a technology sort of challenge that we're trying to solve, it's also a change management and, you know, people engagement challenge. So our approach is to bring all of our colleagues along for the ride, create that awareness, create that education, and from there really start piloting, you know, with small projects and iterate over time to get to those bigger digital twins, which is the second point here on the slide. Ultimately, we also have to show value. So this isn't just about testing out cool technologies or putting in an expensive twin. It has to be used. It has to generate value for all of our teams and for our customers as well. And I think one of the ways we can do that is by not going full scale from the beginning, but actually building this in sprints. And I think this makes a lot of sense because technology is evolving so rapidly that we have to do things in small releases. We have to be very agile and sort of scale this over time. So with that, I think that concludes my slides, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Yeah, thank you, David. That was great. If there are any questions from the audience, please, I'll ask them as I can. Maybe a first question, and I think, David, you touched on this towards the end, but I'll maybe ask specifically. One of the thoughts I had as you were going through your presentation, so you noted that the sum is greater than the parts. Totally makes sense. Is there a risk, and maybe this is for those who are on the call or on the webinar that are looking at potentially deploying digital twin technology, is there a risk that, you know, this in some ways is almost too big to start, to kind of play on that phrase where you noted at the end, biting off nuggets, biting off incremental pieces? But I think that's one general risk you might have where this seems like it's so all-encompassing that I don't even know where to start. Maybe you have some feedback there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more we can chat about. I could literally talk for a day on this, but yeah. You're absolutely right. This is a very big area. You compound that with the prop tech market, which is exploding. There's new technologies every day. So the question is, where do you start? How do you attack this? And for us, it really comes back to strategy, you know, having your thesis in mind, understanding what it is you want to get out of this, what's the problem you're trying to solve, but then break that down into individual steps. Where are you going to focus first? You know, which asset classes are first priority, which technologies are higher priority? You know, I'd go out on a limb here and say that most real estate companies don't actually know what systems they have in their buildings. So we're talking about digital twins, but even know what automation system you have in your building. There's a whole process behind this that really starts with strategy, in my view.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, it's certainly a topic that we could speak about for a day, I'm sure. Another point, you had a great slide in there where you were highlighting differences between new and existing buildings. From a deployment point of view, are there differences, easier, harder for new, existing buildings? And is the approach different? I think there are probably some on the call that are more focused on existing buildings, some focused on new buildings, some perhaps focused on both. Oxford obviously focused on both, but that was a question specifically around deployment of digital twins, easier, harder, or just differences in how you do it.
Yeah, it's a good question. And you know, I can't say we've figured out the answer to that at the moment. Our digital twins are sort of in flight right now, but I think in the long run, the plan is that yes, the digital twins should be sort of the same across both existing and new buildings. And I'm not suggesting that's necessarily one digital twin platform for all. I think, you know, in my opinion, digital twins are more of a concept as opposed to an exact one technology. It's a combination of technologies. But absolutely, you know, the way in which we're designing buildings right now, we're designing them with the right infrastructure that supports the outcomes that enable those efficiencies and experiences. And all of those are gonna be sort of filtered through the digital twin. So it's a matter of putting the right systems in the building, being able to get to that data, enabling that interoperability. And then we can use those twins through to the operation stage, you know, operating our buildings.
Yeah, that's great. Actually, in building on that, you kind of touched on a point that I wanted to ask about. When it came to developing the strategy before, you know, deploying technology, I would be interested in just understanding who were the what was the cohort or what was the team, you know, what organizational divisions were represented? Because as your point, you know, it's all encompassing. Really, everyone or every division in Oxford, you could argue, can benefit from a digital twin. though at the same time, something new technology deploying, having everyone in the room, that may exacerbate this, you know, too big to start issue, if it was to exist. I'd just be interested in, who's at the table, specifically, as there's probably folks on this call that are interested in what you're saying and just thinking, how do I get started? Who are my ally?
It's a very good question. I think the answer to that is it probably depends, based on your organization and its structure. For us, I'd say we're very lucky to have the buy-in at the senior leadership level. Our CEO and COO and all of our executives believe in this, and they believe this is the future. Apart from that, we've had lots of discussions with, colleagues who run our sites at the building level. But I'd say in general, if you ask the average person, what is a digital building? They'd say, well, that sounds cool, but I have no idea. So when it comes to the strategy, our approach is really to develop that within our digital buildings team first, with individuals who have domain expertise, and then socialize it with the rest of the portfolio. It's not sort of a one and done activity. It's an evolving strategy over time. But I think you really need that domain expertise to kind of get the foundation of the strategy, and then you iterate it over time.
Got it. So in some ways, your charter has been not just to go and say, hey, look at this shiny object. Are you interested? To appear is to say, there's this shiny, maybe you don't even call it a shiny object, but here's a benefit we think we can deliver to you, or here are an array of benefits. Are you interested? Let's talk about how those can benefit you. And that is how you build that consensus or build the support.
Absolutely, yeah. And it goes back to what I was saying before. A big part of this is the technology sort of challenge we're trying to solve with the infrastructure and the twins. But I'd say within our organization, equally as important is that change management challenge. So creating that awareness, that education of what digital buildings is, linking it back to the thesis I mentioned about maximizing our returns, and bringing value to our customers. I think that has to be established first, or at least in parallel with, here's all this cool technology, let's test it out, let's pilot it, let's build digital twins. I think when you do those two things together, that's when you really start seeing success like we are now.
Yeah, it's a great point. Okay, I think that'll do it for our quick chat. To everyone on the audience, again, if you have questions, if anything is thought-provoking, feel free to enter a question. We will have some time at the end to go through those questions as a panel discussion. But I think at this point, I'm going to turn to our next speaker, Emmanuel Daniel of Microsoft, Director, Applied Innovation and Incubation, Smart Buildings and Campuses at Microsoft. Emmanuel is responsible for building and delivering the digital transformation strategy for Microsoft and leads a global multidisciplinary team of architects and experienced designers. He builds experiences that merge technology with the built environment, leading to the formation of spaces that respond to the needs of users. And obviously, Microsoft has a long record of really being at the forefront of deploying digital buildings, smart buildings. I remember one of the first events I attended where we really were digging into smart buildings was at the campus in Redmond. So really, Emmanuel, it's a pleasure to have you. I'll turn it over to you and then we'll be back to chat a little bit.
Perfect. Thank you, Joe. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Emmanuel Daniel. I'm the Director of Digital Transformation and Smart Buildings at Microsoft's GWS. Microsoft GWS, as a high-level introduction, manages 800 of Microsoft's properties across 110 locations globally, and that roughly comes to around 38 million square feet. So when we started to look at the digital twins, our whole angle was, why do we need digital twins? What is the value it's going to drive, and what benefits does it have? What you see on screen here is one of the largest transformation projects that we're currently doing, which is called the Redmond Campus Modernization Project. It is a program where we've decided to focus on employee experience, where how do we transform the way space is consumed, how people interact with that space, and how they're able to be more productive or be better versions of themselves. But to be able to do that, you really need to be able to create a space that is able to adapt to the needs of its users. And as we all know, as users ourselves, as occupiers of space, those changes, those needs keep changing. They evolve with time, they evolve based based on the requirements that I have, and they also evolve based on the behaviors that the particular individual is going through. Behaviors such as, you know, what career stage am I at? What are my priorities today? Am I more focused on getting my kids to school on time? I am more focused on driving my career up the executive ladder, or am I more focused on researching something that I'm absolutely passionate about? So the same physical space and construct adapts to the various needs of its users. Even conditions such as ambient environment, which includes noise, affects people's performance. What our goal was to, one, drive engagement of that space, but at the same time ensure we as owners of the assets are able to provide those services in an efficient and an effective way, because ultimately we've got to balance both sides of the coin. And that's where our thinking around, okay, you know what, digital twins, what does it mean for us and why is it important? So to start it off, I just want to give you a brief highlight on what our vision is for our transformation. Our broad vision is to build, deliver, and operate connected, accessible, sustainable, and secure workspaces that create the best employee experience. Now, to create the best employee experience, I should also be the best manager of the assets that I have and ensure I'm driving effective utilization of the space that I have under me. Now, what does that actually mean and why is that important? Let's take a look at the life cycle of a transformation, the way it sets into a building. Now, when you're talking about one or two buildings, or if you're talking about 800 over buildings that you have, it is still the same process. It is still challenging, it is still difficult, and it is complex. And transformation in the built environment starts at the nuts and bolts, starts with the core and shell, gets into the building automation systems. So we start with a plan. What are we trying to do? Why is this important? How do you build that building? How do you create it? How do you define that space as it suits the people that you have? Then you start going up to infrastructure. We start looking at the shell and core components. You start looking at the building automation components. You start looking at the structured cabling. And from then on, to be able to create the services, you start looking at devices. Why do you need devices? Devices collect data. Data drives experiences. Placement of the devices, location of the devices, performance of the devices. And with these devices, I'm able to weave across all the data to create a unified experience that a person would like to have as they enter and move into a building. And that's where the importance of digital twin starts in. To ensure empowered experiences requires transformation of the physical and the digital. And to drive that transformation, I now have to look at understanding the space, the data that space is able to produce and consume, how people interact with that space, how human behaviors change based on the time of day or based on the weather or the requirements that they have, and pulling all that together to ensure my building is performing as efficiently and as seamlessly as possible. At a very basic stage, a digital twin is a representation of the physical world. But that representation spans across two key areas. And why is that important? So you have spatial and you have visual. Now, to start with, all of us have buildings. All of us have buildings that are new. All of us have buildings that are old. We would like to ensure that we create digital replicas of these buildings. So one, how do I take all of the assets that I have in my buildings? Buildings have been around for a very long time. Building management systems have been around for a very long time. Buildings are treasure troves of data. They keep collecting that data. But is that data accurately mapped and structured to the asset? Is that asset accurately mapped to the space in that building? And is the data the right kind of data that I need? So to start with, creating the physical, the virtual representation of the physical space begins with identifying the assets that I have in that building. How are the assets represented? Then I start looking at the data. Is the data accurately mapped? Then the value of a digital twin is the ability to be able to have real-time connectivity to that data. I want to understand how is my building performing real-time. I want to understand the impacts of the weather. I want to understand impacts of people movement. I want to understand impacts of people consuming that space for the purpose it was intended for. Pulling up all that data, getting it into a platform, and allowing that platform to feed the twin so I get a real-time 3D visualization model of the building is what I'm after. So I've taken the relation of data with the asset to the space, exposed that to the virtual world, created a 3D representation of it. So what I've now done is I'm able to understand how my building functions in a live environment. Using that model, I could simulate it. I could understand performance characteristics of the building. I could make correlations and causations of human behavior based on the data to that particular space type in that asset to see, is this space really as effective as one person said it would be? And that is what digital twins allows for us. Now, at the same time, when I said spatial, why is that important? It is absolutely important because I need to understand, how do I classify the assets that I have in a building? How do I define the schema for these assets? How do I define the state of these assets? Modeling that, so as my portfolio of buildings grow, I'm able to onboard every building that I have and create a virtual representation of that building so I can effectively maintain and manage my entire portfolio. So, ultimately, what is the business value? You know, the technology is great. As a user, as a person, you know, as an owner and a user of the space, my goal is to ensure I cater to the needs of employees, visitors, friends, partners, and family members that walk into the doors of the campus. That's what I strive for. But to be able to do that, what value am I going after? One, building performance. With a digital twin, we started to realize very quickly, I can represent the building effectively. So as the owner, I typically can prioritize the types of data, how that data should be represented at an asset level, and how that asset is tied to the space. I can, using that data, I can now start modeling building performance, see how the building is performing, find out areas of optimization. This optimization is beyond mere fault detection and diagnostics. This optimization allows me to optimize performance of the assets tied to the space that they're related to. Two, space performance. Ultimately, the goal for everyone in real estate is to drive effectiveness of that space. How do I drive effectiveness of that space? How do I get people to flow through my entire building and use the various space types that I have? I can now use the 3D models to be able to understand human flow, use that to define more engaging and conducive spaces, and help ensure that people are satisfied with the way the buildings are designed, and if needed, use that data to be able to design better, greater buildings to drive higher levels of productivity. Finally, intelligent maintenance, coming back to the spatial aspects of it. The ability for us to classify data related to systems and subsystems in a building drives engagement for us to understand how accurately are these assets performing. Now, we always have preventive data. You know, preventive data has always been there, and it's been doing a great job. But in today's world, okay, the angle of the aspect we're driving to is better productivity and better performance of the assets, driving better energy consumption and higher levels of sustainability. How do I do that? How do I achieve that? So that continuous improvement is only possible if I'm able to get a real-time feed of data from the asset, which that data has been properly structured, and use that to model the performance of the assets over the lifetime of the building. Now, if I say simply, how do I try to drive relationship between the weather, between the water consumption, between the occupancy, between the performance of the HVAC, and how does that impact energy consumption of the building holistically in a 3D context? That is what the digital twins enables me to do. So it is actually evolving and empowering us as the owner to provide better services for the end user. And this is why it becomes critical for us. So ultimately, if I have to name off key aspects of why it is important for me, with a digital twin, I'm able to drive better synchronization of the performance of the assets within a building. I'm able to monitor my building with real-time data feeds, not only spatially, but virtually as well, looking at those performance characteristics in 3D. I'm able to track assets and people in my building. I'm able to design spaces for people better in my building. I'm able to understand what space types work and why these space types are consumed more than any other space type in a building. Is it because of a better airflow? Is it because of better environmental features such as the noise levels or the aspects of natural daylighting? I'm able to analyze all of this and eventually create a predictive model where I am now starting to simulate building performance as the buildings start to grow, evolve, and get more the occupants coming in. And that's why digital twins for us becomes a key aspect of allowing us to better manage the portfolio of assets that we have. And with that, I end my presentation. Thank you.
Emmanuel, thank you. That was a great presentation. We just have a moment before we move on. We have some time at the end for questions, but one question that came up that's interesting, I think it was actually directed at David, in terms of training of staff in the buildings, Have there been challenges in finding those who can operate digital twins, use digital twins? And we can certainly talk about that more towards the end, but I thought I would ask you real briefly to give any quick thoughts.
Yeah, sure. And you know, it's a great question. We get that question all the time. If you look at our massive portfolio, that's the biggest challenge we deal with. It's not something that, do the skill sets exist in terms of training operators to use digital twins to manage buildings today? Okay, I'll probably say they're in a ramp-up phase. It is something that we take consciously as well. Enabling the key, Joe, that you have to understand is maintenance of digital twin and the corresponding BIM models that we use to have the virtual model created is of importance. Any changes in the digital world, how does that get replicated onto the BIM models that you have created to ensure integrity of building structures is what we're trying to do. We have a comprehensive training program that we are working with our partners to put into place. This ensures that building operators are evolving their skill sets and understanding it's not just about FDD, it's about space and the representation of that space and how that is going to be used with a digital twin tool.
It's great. Well, that might be a topic that we talk about more with our panel discussion. Emmanuel, thank you very much. It was a great discussion. I think now before I introduce the next speaker, we have a quick video. So I'll let that play and I'll be right back.
Hey, Melbourne. Busy office today. Air quality, check. Gonna need another coffee. Too many people in there. Gonna have to wait. Gotta report the towels are out. Wow, you guys are on it. An open field for coffee. This place could use cleaning.
Okay, great. So now I'm going to introduce our next speaker. Tom Jackson, Chief Strategy Officer at Microshare. Tom brings more than 25 years of senior management experience in leading and developing organizations, teams, and products. He brings his passion for integrating technology, processes, and people to everything he does as Microshare's Chief Strategy Officer. Tom, it's a pleasure to have you. I'll turn it over to you.
Great, Joe. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here today with you and the rest of
you. On, if you'd like to turn it on.
There we go. Okay, thank you. Pleasure to be here with you and the rest of the panelists today. What I'd like to do today is drop down several levels from the conversation that we've had so far and actually speak about implementations that have occurred in the field and what discoveries we've had as a result of that and what lessons we've learned. At the end of the presentation, I give a couple of specific recommendations, and if people are interested in a handout related to digital twin naming, please feel free to reach out to me via email and I'd be happy to provide you with some guidelines there. Let's move forward here. Okay, so this in-field experience that I mentioned a moment ago, what is the experience that we have? Just a quick highlight. We've deployed about over 20,000 sensors in the field and in 24 different countries over the last 18 months or so throughout the pandemic. We've deployed them in warehouses, offices, hospitals, nursing homes, and higher educational institutions. And we've done that with global enterprises, facility management companies, and healthcare institutions and universities. And that's included both innovative companies and also traditional companies. It's not one particular orientation that organizations have. And the folks before have mentioned the need for change management. That's an important element of the deployment of digital twins. One of the things I wanted to start with is what are comments that we get after deploying our digital twins from our clients and from other parties, building contractors, cleaning contractors, housekeepers, et cetera. And that's what I've listed here. One of the issues with digital twins is the labeling of such digital twins. And we've had this refrain from clients, where's that room or space? They'll see on a dashboard or a notification that services are required in a certain area. They're not familiar with the label that's used for the space. And that points to the need for being specific about the locations and familiarizing people with the digital twin and so that they know how to take action based on notifications and spaces that are revealed to them. Another example of difficulty is something we call a motion event that comes from an IoT activity sensor. And people ask if a motion event is the equivalent of a people counter, and it's not. And that requires a conversion in the mind of the user to understand what a motion event is. And an motion event is when the sensor receives a person who is entering the space of the sensor, and it will capture that event. It will also capture a person leaving the space and any activity that is occurring in the space. So defining that for people and having people have an opportunity to get comfortable with that definition and seeing how that shows up in the way of data is a very important element. In addition to that, once people get familiar with the information, then they want to be able to take action based on that information. And it typically requires change. And that change is important and is difficult for people. Ultimately, with respect to a cleaning situation or with custodians, we're speaking with them about moving from a spatial-oriented model of cleaning to a usage-based model. And that's a real challenge. And I'll talk about that in a minute or so. So why should you care about digital twins? Specifically because, frankly, it's not really about the technology. It's about creating value with the data. And there are really three forms of value that are created. There are expense savings, the opportunity for new revenues, and importantly, the opportunity for changed business models. Each of those represent sequentially a more complex and difficult challenge for organizations. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, though, with respect to the first part of that journey, what are three steps that people incur? And those steps are getting familiar with the data, understanding that patterns in that data do emerge relatively quickly, and that presents them with opportunities for low-hanging fruit to take action. Most people are confused initially when they see the data coming out of the twin, and so we work with them to help them understand that. Once they have that understanding, it's time to do some modest experimentation with their operations and begin tweaking things a little bit. And from there, they then have an opportunity to actually restructure process. And that's a bigger challenge for them. So what have some of the surprises and discoveries been? Well, getting and understanding new data, assimilation takes time. We are not talking about when you make this information available, we're not talking about making it available to data analysts. We're talking about making it available to operators and people who have to take action. And those people have a job to do every day, and being able to take action specifically is very helpful for them. Moving from fixed to flow, what I mean by that is most in the sense of a cleaning opportunity within buildings, most spaces are cleaned based on a spatial model, not based on a usage model. A usage model is based on flow, and moving from a fixed spatial model to a dynamic flow model is a challenge. And so we work with operators to help them do that. The other thing is operators don't necessarily want to know just what the patterns are. They want to know specifically what action they should take. And it takes a little while to work with them to uncover those actions. So lessons learned. One of the big lessons is that we want to start not with tables and charts, but with graphics. Trying to deal with situations where you have 3, 4, 5, or 6 different languages that are spoken by people in individual buildings that are taking action. A graphic like what we're representing here is much easier for them to do their job, where green equals clean or red means skip the space. Small wins build momentum. People learn by doing. They learn by experiences, not by reviewing white papers. Doing frequent operational reviews is very important, and to allow them to progressively build their changes is something that helps them as they move forward. It's always important to understand that movement down this path of digital twinning and operationalizing is a journey, and it does take some time. So what are some digital twin naming guidelines, and why are guidelines important? Well, it's very important because when you ask people to take action, you're asking them to take that action based on dashboards and information that is showing up in dashboards, in notifications that may come via an application, text, or by email notifications. And it's important for benchmarking. So the labeling that you use and then the uniformity of that labeling is very important. And what I've just briefly reflected here is a process, is several elements of our digital twinning guidelines that we formulated over the last 18 months to create and follow uniformity and consistency, and to allow for the connection between the physical space and the labeling of that space and twinning, and allowing people to take action based on that. So with that, I'd ask Joe if you're going to come back on, and we can pick up any questions you might have.
Yeah, I'm here. We've received a number of questions. I also want to be cognizant of time and make sure we move right along. Maybe a quick one, Tom, which is a follow-up to the discussion we had, or the question I had for Emmanuel, which we'll probably talk about after as well when everyone's back together on the panel. You know, training skill set for implementing and using digital twins. Real quick, special skills, what's your take on that?
My take is, you have to be very iterative about this approach. There are some special skills that are involved in getting things set up. You're not going to get it right the first time. It's going to take multiple iterations to do that. It is a broad team that you're working with. And what I just described, Joe, is really kind of the infrastructure that you put in place, but no value gets created by that infrastructure. It only gets created by actualizing that in operations. And that's where the bigger challenge is. It's working with the teams, doing training with them, and having an iterative and operational, frequent routine operational approach with them, because you're really changing the whole dynamic of the way they work.
Got it. That's great. Tom, we'll see you again for the panel discussion. Thanks for the presentation. I think now, before we introduce our next speaker, there's a quick video.
In just a few decades, 68% of us will be living in cities. But did you know that cities account for 3/4 of all global CO2 emissions, and population growth and poor planning is making the problem worse? With our transformational AI software platform, we pledge to try and make the world's most polluted cities more sustainable, clean, and efficient. Because we want to build a better future for our children. And we want you to join us.
Okay, great. And we're joined by Michael Jansen. Michael, thanks for joining us. Real quickly to introduce Michael, he's CEO of City Zenith. As an impassioned architect, urbanist, and entrepreneur, Michael Jansen has founded and led high growth companies in the US and Asia for more than 2 decades. When Michael assumed the helm at City Zenith as CEO, he embarked on his personal mission to transform life in cities around the globe. Michael, thank you for joining us. I'll turn it over to you for your presentation.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. And thanks to RealCom for helping to organize this for us. It's a wonderful opportunity to speak, and we're really thrilled about it. Today, my goal is to actually introduce a couple of things that we're doing, and starting with us, and then talk a little bit about a program we have. City Zenith, some of you may or may not have heard of, was actually founded quite a while ago in 2009 by the founders of Google Earth and a company called Revit, which is probably the largest, most widely used BIM technology in the world. And myself, an architect turned entrepreneur. In my last company, we had hundreds of people making 3D models for architects and facilities managers all over the world. And by the time we were something like 500 people, we had to train people on something like 40 or 50 different skills. And we realized that there was just this kind of chaos of tools. You've heard about it from other speakers today and emerging in the market. And that only led to more confusion and efficiency and everything else that you've heard about today, which digital twins are attempting to undo. So as an early practitioner, we've done maybe 20 major digital twin projects across a wide spectrum of entire cities, infrastructure, smart districts, real estate portfolios, airports, ports, the whole gamut. And we decided to, now that our platform has become quite mature, and I'll explain that later, we've decided to implement this core platform technology in cities around the United States and Canada, working with the local Green Building Council or the 2030 district to help specifically commercial building owners leverage digital twin technology to help dramatically reduce carbon emissions. The company, this project actually was taken up by the World Economic Forum, which we recently joined. We are spearheading their Net Zero Cities Initiative. And at the Digital Twin Consortium, we've launched a workshop called Towards Net Zero in Buildings and Cities. So it's really a big focus for us. And urban digital twins are kind of a key. If you haven't heard this term, urban digital twins are digital representations of the physical built environment in our cities, including transport, infrastructure, buildings, and everything else connected to the data in and around them. And you know, they're uniquely good at aggregating and helping to integrate the simulation tools necessary to manage complex solutions, especially those that predict energy consumption, as well as both engineering and financial outcomes for energy consumption, because they allow us, as you heard from the gentleman from Microsoft, to scenarioize multiple parallel strategies in order to go green. For example, BMS, solar, geothermal, electric heat power, these types of things, bringing them into a common spatial and temporal framework that allows us to run these calculations and simulations at a huge scale. So the program itself is called Clean Cities, Clean Future. We're beginning to roll it out in different cities around the United States. The first to sign was the city of New York, where we're working with the 2030 district there in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And each pilot is about 9 months and involves participants of up to 5 to 10 local building owners, as well as universities, the city, and others to build out this urban twin. And in the New York project, we've got a variety of partnerships. 2030 is leading this in the Navy Yard. We just begun deploying this in the first couple of buildings. Building 77 is the first. We've also recently signed this with Phoenix. And Phoenix is going to be an extraordinary opportunity for us to take on a city which actually ranked last in sustainability in the United States, and they're really interested in redensifying it with a sustainable strategy. So we've signed a deal with the Downtown Phoenix Partners, and we're beginning to welcome building owners there. Amazon is a major sponsor of that project, and ASU the AI researchers from ASU are involved, and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, similar thing. We're working with the Green Building Alliance, which is the Green Building Council, and they're the steward, and we're taking this now to the building owners, that there will be buildings from the University of Pittsburgh, from Carnegie Mellon, and other major commercial operators, all taking part in this pilot. So just generally, if there is the goals, and I'll wrap up after this, are to really use this powerful technology, which is uniquely powerful at aggregating all kinds of data, and whether it's 2D, 3D, 4D, sensor, all of that. So we can analyze energy management protocols in greater detail, especially renewable assessment strategies. This will provide the facilities managers and the building managers with accurate, reliable information necessary for policy making, and specifically the building owners. It'll help them measure operational, financial, and productivity savings from participating in these green building retrofits before they even break ground, which I think is a phenomenal thing, including an exploration into the world of carbon credits. So if anyone's interested in this type of thing, whether you're on the city side or the building side, feel free to get in touch with me. If you're not in your city yet, we're probably coming there. And that's really it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. That was great. I haven't had, to the audience, I haven't had a lot of time to ask a lot of questions, but we do have time at the end after our last presentation coming up next. So please do keep asking questions. I'll try to get to as many as I can. Michael, one quick one for you. Commercial building owners, facility managers, building engineers, the stakeholders here, how can they register their interest to participate in the Clean Cities, Clean Future initiative?
For this one, write to me, m.jansen@cityzenith.com. Write to the CEO, because I'm very specifically looking at this mature crowd of professionals for potential participants. Write to me and we'll talk about it.
Excellent. So we'll see you back for the panel discussion just in a little bit. Right now, I think we have one final video and then I'll do the intro for our last speaker. Okay, excellent. I'd like to introduce Andrew Dennison, Director of Enterprise Services at Drone Deploy. Andrew is the Director of Enterprise Services, where he helps its enterprise clients design and operate their global drone programs. He's intimately familiar with entire enterprise drone technology stack, the entire technology stack, and industry-specific ROI. Andrew, it's a pleasure to have you. I'll turn it over to you for your presentation.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, everyone. How about that music on our video? Very exciting. I like that little hard rock, but yes, I'm excited to be here today because I think Drone Deploy fits in a slightly different mold than some of the other speakers in that we look at ourselves as a digital twin provider. If you want the data to build your digital twin, you come to us and we'll, using our technology, we'll help you collect it. And so that's the angle that we come from. And then as you can see, we've been doing digital twins with drones for a very long time, so we've started to add some AI to do some automatic detection of defects, and that's really the story that I'm going to share with you briefly today. But the image you can see on the screen right here, this would be a 2D orthomosaic is what we call it, but it's a much like a very high definition satellite view that was captured from a drone actually, and then you can also see a lot of the icons or the little drawings on there, little highlights, are areas where we have detected deficiencies or inspector has counted something or looked at something. And then in the portfolio, in the platform that we offer, a lot of those blue little dots you see are actually panoramas. So you can get a bird's eye or actually a person's eye view of exactly what's going on in that particular facility. But that's the idea. What we find is that many of our customers have pavements, they have roofs, and then you can't see it in this photo, but they have facades. And so our drones are very good at creating three-dimensional models of anything that they fly over. And what we've done is we've broken up our analysis of those three-dimensional models into these three components that you see here. So we analyze your pavement, we analyze your roof, and we analyze your facades or exteriors to help you build better forecasts for maintenance, repairs, budgets, etc. Many of our customers deliver our inspections or our digital twins to their contractors, who then use the measurements created from our models to predict or to bid the job, or even to scope and bid or plan out the repairs. So just diving in a little bit further, as you can see, but on the left you can see lots of issues detected on that roof over there. Most of those are automatically detected. We do have a workflow where engineers will still manually review areas that were defects that were automatically detected by our AI. We're getting better every day with that. Also, we do allow people to manually go in and tag, identify issues themselves in case, you know, someone wants to inspect the roof but doesn't want to walk on the roof, or it's a very common use case for us, or needs to look at 12 different properties but doesn't want to fly around the country. Well, we have drone pilots. You can just tell us to fly the 12 different properties, and then you can stay at your desk and look at each one very carefully. That's some of the advantages you get from our digital twins. Here's a three-dimensional model, just a different angle, same technology, but you can see here what the output of our software looks like. Again, we're also analyzing pavement, and you can see the cracks here. We'll get defect outlines, so we have exact defect measurements in the pavement, for example. We know the type of defect. We can actually build a budget of how much it's going to cost to repair directly from drone data only. No one needs to go on the site besides the drone pilot for maybe 30 minutes. A very popular output that a lot of our clients like is PCI. So we have lots of big box retailers and other property management customers who will ask us to do pavement condition index scores across their entire portfolio, so they can better plan and budget for their pavement repairs across their entire, across the country or across the globe. And you can see here in this particular example, this particular customer, after we went there, they only chose to repair some of these red areas where the pavement was very low quality, and they left the yellow and obviously the green and orange areas. That way the pavement scope reduced drastically without losing a lot of quality that they want to have on their facilities. One of my favorite quotes, we have an insurance client who insures lots of buildings, and they tell us, they use us in the process before they just choose to underwrite the facility. They'll have us fly the thermal camera over the roof. And what they tell us is that they, from our drone imagery, they detect things that they would not see if there were boots on the roof inspecting the roof themselves, particularly subsurface penetrations show up. They show up very well in the thermal imagery. And you can see if there's going to be major roof repairs a year or two down the road, you can see in the thermal imagery today. And so that's why this particular thermal inspection is really popular with a lot of our insurance companies. It's particularly their underwriting departments. And this is really the story that we're telling, that our clients are telling us today with what our data. Again, Drone Deploy, we have drone software that maps and analyzes your buildings, and then people like all of you take this data and really add extra value to it. You know, we want to be kind of that core, that basic geospatial 2D and 3D data. And our customers, what they do with our data is they're able to objectively rank and assess all their portfolio of sites across the country, and then better plan their annual facility maintenance budgets. And that's the real big value that we've seen so far, is maybe you have $100 million to spend on roof repairs next year. Well, if you inspect all your properties, and it's very inexpensive and very fast to do so with drones, maybe you find that you can actually spend $80 million next year, but get the same output that you would have spent with $100 million because you have such better on-the-ground knowledge of each individual roof versus just looking at a spreadsheet of which roof was repaired last. And so that's the real value of Drone Deploy, and that's our story in facilities. I believe that's also my last slide. So there we go.
Thanks, Andrew. A quick one, and then I'll bring everyone back for the panel discussion. In general, drone-based deployments or condition assessments, deployed condition assessments, how would you generally describe them as being different from condition, just kind of on the ground condition assessments, and maybe that's a time issue, a cost issue, an effectiveness issue, maybe it's all of those plus others.
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, all of the above. So the first one is it's extremely fast. Because we're benefiting from a drone flight on a standard big box retail type of location, we're on site for an hour, maybe 2 hours tops. And you're going to get 90% of the data back in 2 or 3 days. And we can do large, 500,000 facility portfolios very quickly with that type of workflow. The other one is much less expensive because we're benefiting so much from software. One that we really like, a lot of our clients tell us, we love that it's so standardized. It's the same for all our facilities. We don't have tons of individual contractors delivering us different type of reports. Clearly it's much less expensive, which everyone likes that too.
Yeah. Is there a safety issue as well? I know I would imagine getting on roofs or maybe just from an insurance point of view.
A lot of our clients ask and say they don't want people on roofs anymore. That's where people get hurt. The other thing too is you have to go out and send a guy to inspect your pavement, a different guy to inspect your roof, a different guy to inspect your HVAC. And so 5 truck rolls becomes 1 drone roll. And that makes it a lot less, less people, no one on the roof, a lot of good things there.
Okay, that's great. Andrew, if everyone else on the panel would like to also come back on stage, on our virtual stage, we can have a couple of questions and discussions. And again, to the audience, please feel free to ask more questions. I have a wealth of them, but I always like to hear more and we can keep it a little interactive. So one, maybe this is a bit of a skeptic. I'll throw it out there, and then anyone who would like to respond, maybe we'll start that way, and then there will be some specific questions, I'm sure, as well. Do typical office workers really want all this info and functionality, and do they use it? And I think that's a fair question, right? What are the question gets into, percentage of users that are actually, some of the use cases that have been discussed that are actually using it, but maybe I'll leave it there. And maybe I'll add to the question, not only do the occupants use it, but are there ways to make digital twin data and information and actionable intelligence more consumable on the part of maybe the occupants, the more novice users? Maybe we'll go first, David, and then Emmanuel, and then we can, in the order we did the presentations.
Sure, yeah. So my opinion is if you build it, the people will come. And we've actually had some early experience with a pilot with an app that we did a few years ago in one of our buildings for one of our tenants. It was an app that allowed our tenants on 3 particular floors to control temperature from their phone. And we saw about, 60% utilization. So out of 500 employees, about 60% of them actually signed up for the app. And within a span of a year, we had over 7,000 requests through the app, and we could actually see down to the zones where these, temperature requests were coming from. So I truly believe that, yes, if you build a quality product and put it out there, tenants will use it. You compound that with the current situation today with COVID and the pandemic. I think by giving our tenants and customers access to this information, it puts them at a level of comfort as well. So yes, I truly believe that, this will be used.
That's great. Emmanuel, do you have anything to add on just
to David's point, I'm going to say this. When you talk about a building, people walk into a building assuming everything inside that building is going to work. I don't wake up and go to the office thinking that, hey, look at the amazing lighting management system my building has. I turn on the lights work. The digital twins is the foundational technology that allows me as the owner of the building to classify the building, decompose the assets in that building, and ensure I'm able to get data from those assets and manage the building better. What it does is it empowers me, the owner of the building, to orchestrate and create services that occupants would love to consume and use. Now, if I don't have great experiences in my building, why do people come to work in my building? They can go wherever they want to work. They can go to a cafeteria if they have to. So what it does for me is it is invisible to the occupants, but it makes the building more visible to the operators, allowing us to curate and fine-tune services that people can consume. So to David's point, if I have to show them how the air quality inside my building is compared to the outside environment, either because of haze, forest fires, or some other climatic conditions that's being affected on Tom's video there, I need to be able to have an IEQ sensor. The IEQ sensor needs to be mapped with that space, and that space needs to be represented digitally so people know what is happening in the space that they're in. And that's why digital twins becomes critical for me as the glue that allows me to showcase to them how healthy, safe, secure my building and that space is. And that's why for them it is transparent, but it makes the building more visible to the owner operator because I can curate and create better services.
That's great. Good feedback from both of you. Tom, and then Michael, and then we'll go to Andrew. Any comments on kind of actual use and even extending that to strategies to drive more use of these capabilities?
Just a simple comment, Joe. If we would have asked BlackBerry users in 2007 if they thought that they needed a new smartphone, the answer would have been, geez, I'm doing just fine with my BlackBerry. I can accomplish what it is that I want. They really had no idea what was possible. When Apple showed up with their iPhone, they redefined how smartphones and the user experience, what the user experience was. I think we're at an early stage. We're at that same stage now in terms of what people can expect out of these kind of technologies and how they unfold over the next 5 to 7 years.
That's great. It's funny, I was listening to a podcast yesterday and somebody cited I didn't realize this, but McKinsey had a stat, I guess they did some research on mobile phones back in the day, and their estimate was that there would be at most 1 million mobile phones in the world. Again, this was obviously decades ago, but it's a good point. Michael, anything to add?
No, I think, or just very little. We don't generally have quote unquote retail users. So our users are city professionals, architects, engineers, planners, et cetera. So, but that group in a project of 15 to 25 are power users. They know what they're doing. They're very excited about it. They're very active. They're very engaged. In a later iteration of what we're doing as part of the development, one of the things that happened in 22 is a mobile app. We've been going through this steady process of aggregation and then visualization and then the whole data and the simulation piece. And the next thing will be kind of reaching out to tenants. But I wouldn't worry about that right now. I think somebody said it, I can't remember who. This is what happens under the hood. The effect on people in buildings is significant. And the effect in the organizations is dramatic. It's much more transformational for companies once fully rolled out than enterprise software. So people can really have a long way to get their head around how transformational digital twins actually will be. So yeah, that will take some time.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. That's good. Andrew, anything you want to ask or add? Sorry, before I ask the next question. I think you're muted.
Yes, sorry. To make things simpler for our clients, we find that although we're looking at 1,000 stores, one person looks at all 1,000 stores' doors or all 1,000 stores' windows. And so we actually ask them, what are the rule sets for maintenance and repair? And we will run their rule sets. For example, we only repair pavements with PCI below 30. And then we'll run that form and then we'll just give them here's your prescription. You told us what you wanted to do. Here's what the repair plan would be. That's how we make things simpler for the clients.
Okay, great. This was a question actually that was directed after after David, you finished your presentation, but it was directed to you, but I actually think it's a good question for everyone, especially you and Emmanuel. So maybe we'll go in that same order again. It was all around smart building ratings and benchmarking and standards. And I think what's notably interesting about this, they mentioned Smart Score, Spire, which maybe Aspire, I think that's more indoor air quality related, but there's actually a number of different standards. There's also, Emmanuel and I were talking before the session here started, there for building data, there's the BRIC schema, there's Haystack. There's a lot of them. I think it's all a good thing, but from your point of view, is there value? And I'm assuming you probably would say there is. What is the value and maybe how do you make sense of this array of emerging standards?
Yeah, I think there is absolutely value. And like you said, there's a lot of different standards emerging on the market today. I think this is sort of like the early days of sustainability. If you look at what LEED did for the industry, it helped to get everybody on the same page and sort of rowing in the same direction. And I think that'll start to happen as well in, you know, smart buildings, but I think it's still yet to be seen what that dominant standard is going to be. There's lots of different ones out there and lots of different approaches, but there doesn't seem to be, let's say, widespread consensus yet on which one to choose. And I think to some extent, maybe, you know, smart buildings is a little bit different in the sense that, you know, it's all dependent on your organization and what you're trying to achieve. There might be commonalities amongst different real estate owners, but, you know, part of it is quite personal and tied to your strategy as well. So I think time will tell, but absolutely these standards will help point us in the right direction and hopefully help to increase adoption of smart building technologies.
Great. Emmanuel, I think same question to you. I know this is a topic that you're focused on. I think the follow-up question is to you as well is do you have any insight on what is the right layer, if you will, of that stack for the standard? Is it a smart building standard? Is it an indoor air quality standard, but also a healthy building standard, but also a data standard? I'd be interested in your feedback. And I think you are muted as well.
Sorry, Joe. I'd probably say all of the above. And you know, I'll tell you the reason for that. So standards are important. They are needed. What they do is they help establish faith that, yes, what we're doing in one property is universal, global. So, you know, everybody feels loved. Everybody feels comfortable that there is a way to track it and monitor it. What they do not do, however, is they don't fine tune it to the space of the occupant or the geo that you're operating in. You know, IAQ and in Asian countries is of immense importance, especially during certain periods during haze, especially in Singapore where I come from. It's really important. People have health conditions that are triggered because of the quality of air that you have. So in those cases, reporting to them on what the air quality is a big deal. Now, at the same time, if I look at other buildings, you know, we start talking about comfort index. Comfort index takes into computation multiple things, including temperature, including lighting. And sometimes you also take in IAQs as well. What does this do? I curate the environment suitable to the needs of the occupants that I have, so they are more comfortable to work in. So having these standards allows us to understand, okay, how are we performing? How are our assets being benchmarked against each other? How do we drive evaluation? Now, the second part of it, its standards always tend to be a point in time, right? I prove that I'm able to meet these requirements and I get certified. Our evolution has been, how do I always gain the faith and confidence of the tenants by having real-time visibility of data no matter where they are? So it's not a point in time. It's if I'm sustainable continuously all the time, every time, and I have the live data for my backend systems to prove it. So structuring that data, you know, we talk about multiple schemas, but ultimately we adapt the schemas to suit our specific operation styles and processes because state data across assets start to vary. So how I manage it could be different from somebody else, you know, but then ultimately it ties back to the people that I have. So for me, standards are critical, but curating those standards to suit geo environments, environmental factors, location, type of people that work in those buildings need to be fine-tuned. And ultimately, real-time publication of how we are achieving those standards on a daily basis is going to be that confidence gainer that all people inside that building want to have.
Great. Thank you for that. Tom, do you have anything to add?
The only comment I'd make, Joe, is we didn't want to have the evolving standards get in the way of the creating value through use cases. We also knew that there was a lot that we had to learn along with our clients. So our approach was to be iterative about what we were doing, not to look to the standards to try to solve the problem, but to tie our work to the use cases. And that's what we've done. And we were able to do that in a very narrow way with the understanding that we would evolve that over time.
Great. Michael, do you have anything on standards? Chad?
Yeah, we developed Smart World to be able to plug into and out of standards. So we do work with different data standards, whether they're COBE standards or they're smart city standards or they're, you know, 5G standards. You know, what we've done is create kind of a 3D spatial temporal canvas to which you can attach any kind of data at any moment in time. So the way we've dealt with the standards issue is to rise above the, as you've heard, competing standards to create a kind of visual spatial framework on top of that. You can let nest on top of anything. So we could sit on top of David's data, and if he has 50 systems and bring them all into one spatial temporal framework, we could show one IoT sensor in the basement of any one of its 400 properties, or we could show data across all 400 properties in six continents side by side. So that's how we leveraged it. And so we're kind of taking a neutral approach there.
Got it. Great. Andrew, from a drone deploy point of view, where do standards fit in? More standards, fewer standards? What's your take for the coming take?
There's quite a few standards in the aviation world. I would follow all of those, but that's not really relevant to facility data, but it is to get the data in our system. But we're very good on those and can go deep there. From an output perspective, we deal in 2D and 3D data. Standard outputs are DXFs, CAD files, point clouds, and anything with annotations is usually KMLs, KMZs, various. So, and we have very open APIs. So plug in, download, all that type of thing.
Got it. Great. So I'll go to another question. And again, keep the questions coming in to those on the audience. This one I won't ask anyone specific, but I'll just throw it out there and then we can just, in an organized fashion answer if we'd like. So buildings that respond to tenants based on facial recognition are being widely adopted in Asia Pacific countries. Will it be as widely adopted in the US or will privacy issues inhibit adoption? I think there's a lot of perspectives there. There's the side of, with facial recognition, you can actually deliver a pretty personalized outcome, regardless of what that might be, but at the same time, you're collecting personally identifiable information. So I'll just leave it there. Maybe we start, David or Emmanuel or both of you start, and then those on the vendor side also, I would be interested in hearing from you.
I think it's a very sensitive area. I think given the size of our portfolio globally, where it makes sense, where it's legal, absolutely, we'll probably look at it. I would also suggest that beyond just privacy concerns, there's a lot of cybersecurity concerns as well with smart buildings. So I know RealCom is all over that as well, but I think those are two things that we all need to think about as we go down this path.
I'll add to David's point, and the question is very well framed. Asian portfolios, Asian properties are more risk-taking when it comes to facial recognition. It's something that's widely rolled out. Governments have it, buildings have it. The challenge that we face here is how ready are we to understand what are we giving up in terms of privacy as we consume these services? If you walk into a building today, and it doesn't matter where the building is, and you're talking about indoor navigation, you're talking about ambient environment settings, or you're just talking about going and finding your colleague who you'd like to meet for lunch with, there is enormous amounts of data that is being generated. And if that data is separated, it doesn't matter. But correlating that data, I can uniquely pinpoint behaviors and habits of an individual and what they would do and where they would be at a certain point in time. It's there today. It's available to the buildings, the way you consume the building services and the functionality of the building, as simple as lighting and temperature, can pinpoint your individual behaviors. What we try to do is to drive faith in the system that how do we anonymize that data so we cannot uniquely identify who you are by ensuring those correlations cannot be established. You don't need facial recognition to do that. Your building operation habits will tell you that today. For us to be successful, it is about meeting the cultural requirements of the geography that we operate in. If people are more prone to consuming a service because of the value they get, our job is to guarantee their privacy. Because ultimately for us, if I cannot gain the trust of my tenants by having the right level of rules and laws and privacy requirements, my services in the building will fail. And if the building services fail, the building becomes useless. So for us, it is understanding geographically what the cultural sentiments of the people are. For example, if I do facial recognition somewhere out in the Middle East, I have to be respectful of people having headdresses on. Right? I can't tell them, hey, you want to get in the building, take off the headdress. It doesn't work that way. So balancing social sentiments, balancing cultural sentiments, and ensuring protection of that data and ensuring anonymity of the services that are being consumed is going to be critical. And that's why I think geographically we are headed there. You have local regulations as well, where in some states in the US, you can do facial recognition, and some states you can't do facial recognition. But ultimately, the goal for us is, based on the demographics of people occupying that building, how comfortable are they? And because of the use of a certain technology, we would never inhibit someone from consuming a service, because without their consent, we can't roll that service out. So that's why it's a little tricky, Joe, but yeah, it varies for us by geo. And, you know, people acceptance is the most critical thing.
Yeah, no, great answer. I know this is a tricky subject, without a doubt. I thought it was a useful question just to get some insight. And obviously, it's something of interest to the speakers. I'll turn it over to the vendors. I won't call on anyone in particular. I guess the one additional question to this, if you have any insights or any thoughts on ways to deliver that personalized outcome without necessarily collecting personally identifiable information, that could be that middle ground where we can do almost as well without collecting anything sensitive. But I'll just leave it open if anyone wants to add on the personally identifiable information front.
Well, as the question was about Asia, I lived in Asia for 25 years, 5 years in China and 20 years in India, and Emmanuel's country where he's from, Singapore, I've been 30 times. So, you know, I would first of all say I agree with everything Emmanuel said. That is really, I share that perspective. That there is just the attitude towards privacy varies by culture. You know, in the UK even, they are quite comfortable being, you know, in London being, you know, seen on video 300 times a day, which is what happens if you walk in London for 8 hours. In the US, we have very strong opinions about that. But I will just say one thing, that it is cultural. There will be a variety of answers. I think that here it's going to anonymization of data is the major issue. If you look at companies like Streetlight Data that deal with passenger data, so they provide that to like the bus service in the city, so they can optimize routes and pickups and whatnot. That's scrubbed mobile data, so they just know that somebody was there and that they took that path, but not who was there. Yeah. So I think in American cities, that's going to be our compromise, because we can't say, I don't think, to be efficient, we need data. We can't deny, we can't say, okay, we're not going to look at any of this because, you know, we have these objections. So it's about how do we preserve these privacy concerns, right? And I think some companies and governments are doing it.
Great. Anyone else before we move on to the next question?
Just a brief comment, Joe. We've found that it's very important to be upfront about communicating. We deploy lots of sensors, so to be upfront about how those, what kind of data is being gathered, and working with our clients to communicate that to their employees, and also deploying signage that helps explain that there is no personally identifiable information that's being gathered. Notwithstanding that communication, we've had all kinds of sensors and communication materials ripped down from the walls, and that's going to happen. We're at an early stage of this evolving, and I think that is going to be something that happens continuously over the next 10 years, whether people get comfortable with it or not, we'll see.
Great. Andrew, anything to add?
I was thinking about this one. I don't know if I have much to add in the privacy space. We do blur out faces just like Google Maps. So,
yeah, no, it's certainly specific to, a specific issue to specific use cases, of course, or an issue to specific use cases. I know it's funny just observing the market over the years. There have certainly been some cases of vendors maybe overselling the product or overselling the lack of sensitivity around private data. But then at the same time, I think moving forward, there's much more of a focus across the landscape, different types of sensors, different types of information being collected. There's more of a focus on being very transparent about what you are doing, what you aren't doing. So you kind of stop any type of skepticism up front, or try to stop it. And then also, I think, being fairly clear about the value of, we're collecting these types of data because we want to be able to do this. And then you can opt out, or you at least know, oh, well, you just want to know how many people entered a bathroom. if you need to know, does it need to be cleaned and when does it need to be cleaned? And what I get is a clean bathroom. That's great. So, you know, I think that's good. And I think on the buyer side, there's also a lot more understanding, the practitioner, if you will, more understanding of what data needs to be collected to deliver certain outcomes. So if you have in your mind, we don't want to go above this threshold, if you will, of this is too sensitive to collect, this is okay to collect, that can lead to better discussions around, you know, we're okay with that data being collected because it's leading to this outcome. So just a quick nugget. This other question is a good one. It came in a little earlier. I'll read it and then, you know, maybe give a quick commentary on how I interpret it. In your modeling, I forget who it was directed to, but let's just say it's directed to everyone. Are you seeing any patterns or trends of variables that impact building occupant performance? And I kind of interpret that to just mean, given all the data being collected, are there any interesting trends around just the performance of the building that you're observing? Maybe take this as a interesting things we've learned that we didn't expect to learn. Again, David or Emmanuel, I'll go to you first, and then we can go to the vendor side.
I'm not sure I completely understand the question, but I think my response would be the more data that we have, the more we can analyze these sorts of trends and interactions between trends to sort of optimize not only the building's performance, you know, from a technical perspective, but also for our customers as well. And also pairing up some of the data that's coming from the building with external data sets, such as customer satisfaction results or calls into our 310 Max service. So for example, if you know, it's too cold or too hot in the space, light bulb is out, being able to correlate all of that information with the building, that information we have from the building. So yeah, I mean, it's still early days. I have a few thoughts on, you know, certain metrics and things that would point to building performance, but I think we're only just scratching the surface right now.
Yeah, and to David's point, I would answer this probably with an example. If you take something as simple as plug load monitoring, when you have all the appliances and goods plugged in at the offices and they're running, and suppose you don't go to the office for a couple of months, do people turn that off? You know, they're still running out there, you know, so when you look at the base load for your building, it's still high up, even though there is no occupancy in that building. Now we are able to track this because at metering level, I'm tracking plug load in a building. If I didn't track plug load in a building, the opportunity for me to optimize energy consumption through these white good assets, let's say, goes away. So building performance automatically goes up if I have more visibility to the data that the building is generating. But what that then does is it adds a cost layer, because to monitor that data, I need to have meters in there or sub-meters in there. And I need to integrate to those meters. And I need to extract that data. So the cost for saving energies and utilities is definitely high. But then the cost of integration and the benefits I would gain through energy saved and having a much more sustainable building is extremely impactful. So that's what data does for us, right? And this is very simple. Everybody knows plug load monitoring. That's what it does. Now, if I shift from there, okay, the other burden that we all carry as owners of assets is, are people using the assets? Okay, are people using my space? Do people love my lobbies? Do people love my water coolers, you know, do they drink from it? Okay, are they communicating, collaborating in meetings that I have? What data does for us is all of a sudden it gives visibility to the occupants on points of interest within the building. I have multiple activities happening across the building. When a person comes and goes to a building, they're not aware of it because they go from point A to point B, they see what meeting happens. Indulging their interests by allowing the building to say, hey, you know, I know you like this. They're serving this type of food in the cafeteria in building X. Why don't you give it a shot? Hey, you know, we know you love to do yoga. They've got a special yoga session happening with a star-studded yoga instructor happening at 5 p.m. We like to stay back. So automatically, I'm driving community engagement in the space that I've created. That then translates to better effectiveness of that space. And that is only available because I know what data is happening, what data is being collected, what events are happening, and how people are moving around. So instantaneously, investing time to collect the right kind of data centered around the experiences you want to have in that space is going to have monumental outcomes. To Tom's example, you know, the coffee and the cafeteria lines. it's a big deal. It's a really big deal, because why? I would love for people to enjoy their food, but enjoying the food, the frustration of standing in line to wait to get to your food upsets the experience. But if I'm able to delight someone to say, hey, look, you know, the cafeteria has the food you love, and guess what? You've got these dining spaces options available to you. Would you like to go in now and pick that up or pre-order your food? Right? So these elements drive that engagement in corporate space, which keep people coming back and back again. And that's what I want. I want employees or visitors or friends to love to come to properties that we own, because the experience is so amazing. And that happens only with data.
That's great. I think we may have to wrap it there. Sarah, I think I'll turn it back to you. I would like to thank everyone for being here. Great comments, great discussion. I think a lot of learning. And thank you to everyone who listened into the webinar as well. Sarah?
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thanks to Joe for moderating the session, and thanks for the panelists to join us today and sharing your insights with the community. I really appreciate it. I also want to thank the audience for joining us. I know everyone has very busy schedules these days, so really appreciate you taking the time to be with us this morning or afternoon, depending on where you are. I do want to invite you to join us for a couple of upcoming sessions. We do have our RealCom Live episode airing tomorrow morning, or 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern. And that episode will be with Will O'Donnell from Prologis Ventures. And then our next webinar is coming up in September. And in that session, we'll be talking about smart districts. So not just a smart building, but actually on a larger scale, what are people doing there? So should be an interesting session. And then with that, I'd like to wrap the webinar. And again, thanks to all of you. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.